Time for a sofa upgrade? Visit washablesofas.com and discover Anabay, where designer style meets budget-friendly prices, with sofas starting at $699. Anabay brings you the ultimate in furniture innovation with a modular design that allows you to rearrange your space effortlessly. Perfect for both small and large spaces, Anabay is the only machine-washable sofa inside and out. Say goodbye to stains and messes with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics that make cleaning easy. Liquid simply slides right off. Designed for custom comfort, our high-resilience foam lets you choose between a sink-and feel or a supportive memory foam blend. Plus, our pet-friendly, stain-resistant fabrics ensure your sofa stays beautiful for years. Don't compromise quality for price. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your living space today with no-risk returns and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get up to 60% off plus free shipping and free returns. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Let's be real. Life happens. Kids spill. Pets shed. And accidents are inevitable. Find a sofa that can keep up at washablesofas.com. Starting at just $699, our sofas are fully machine washable inside and out. So you can say goodbye to stains and hello to worry-free living. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics. They're kid-proof, pet-friendly, and built for everyday life. Plus, changeable fabric covers let you refresh your sofa whenever you want. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa anytime to fit your space, whether it's a growing family room or a cozy apartment. Plus, they're earth-friendly and trusted by over 200,000 happy customers. It's time to upgrade to a stress-free, mess-proof sofa. Visit washablesofas.com today and save. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
I don't know.
Okay, so let's now go back to Exhibit 150. What significance, if any, do you give to the various triangles that are on the hoodie? Could you describe to the jury what those are and what's their purpose?
So the triangles are labels that were placed by either the police or the crime lab or someone, and the point of the triangle generally is pointing towards a hole in the shirt. As you can see, there are multiple ones here, and I want to make sure that you don't confuse it with this rather large defect, which is caused by something else.
So let's start with each one, and we'll go through these quickly. Let's start and zoom in on number one. What did you conclude about the source of that from the depiction, the hoodie?
Sustained.
Did you evaluate what is depicted is number one in that slide as part of your review?
Yes.
And what was your evaluation?
Sustained.
Let's go back and zoom out. Have you in your career examined clothing either as part of your forensic pathology practice or your emergency medicine practice to determine the source of defects in clothing?
Yes.
How many times have you done that approximately in your career?
Several hundred.
And have you, in that those several hundred times, have you ever had to reach a conclusion as to whether there was any connection between defects in clothing and wounds to humans?
Many times.
Can you give some examples of the many times you've had to look at clothing and defects in clothing to assist you in determining wound recognition in a human?
Yes, so let me clarify. It's mostly used in forensic pathology, not so much in emergency medicine. The clothing and the cause of the wound is as important as in emergency medicine as the treatment of the wound. But in forensic pathology, it's a key component to any examination where you think that it was an unnatural death. So I've done it in gunshot wounds, in stab wounds, multiple times, looking at the defects, looking at the direction of the, you know, of what I think the bullet, you know, the bullet track was, determining entry and exit wounds. In stab wounds, I've utilized them to help determine offensive and defensive wounds or injuries. So yes, many times.
Have you ever performed that analysis? You mentioned, testified earlier, 500 to 1,000 evaluations of dog-inflicted wounds on humans. Have you ever performed the analysis of defects in clothing and compared them to wounds on humans in the context of dog-inflicted wounds on humans?
I don't think so. Perhaps.
Well, yes. So in terms of, have there been any instances of doing that in your career? Have you done that at all in your career?
Maybe that one child case.
All right. So let's go now to the you were discussing the defects in the arm, as well as the wounds in the arm and then the defects in the clothing. In terms of the, back to exhibit one. In terms of that pattern that is in the arm, and in terms, let's go back to the hoodie, I'll strike that. Have you in your career, in the terms of evaluating motor vehicle accidents, have you evaluated the clothing of victims of motor vehicle accidents?
Yes.
How many times roughly have you evaluated what clothing looks like in terms of motor vehicle accidents?
Well, in many cases, I had to cut off the clothing in the emergency department, so I observed the clothing then. And then in the post-mortem cases, I evaluated the clothing, but oftentimes, sometimes it wasn't helpful.
Have you ever evaluated clothing in determining whether or not the defects in the clothing are consistent or inconsistent with a motor vehicle accident? Have you ever evaluated that as a forensic pathologist?
Not specifically.
Right. And in terms of your observations in either emergency medicine or forensic pathology, have you ever observed defects from motor vehicle accidents in clothing.
Yes.
Is what is depicted in this exhibit consistent or inconsistent with a motor vehicle accident?
Sustained.
In determining, let's go back to exhibit one, please. In determining and reaching your opinion with regard to the source of these wounds, is it necessary for you to reach that opinion to see a specific dog to determine whether the wounds are from a dog in general?
No.
And in your experience that you talked about earlier today, the 500, 1,000, was it ever necessary in that experience to go locate the dog, to see the dog, to treat or evaluate the patient?
No.
Why is it, well, in terms of, we're going to move to another category, studies. Did you review any studies informing your opinions in this case?
Can we put the lights on and take this?
Yeah. Yes, thank you, Your Honor. Yes.
Yes, many.
And did those studies that you review support or not support your conclusions in this case?
Objection. Sustained.
Which studies did you rely upon?
Well, I reviewed quite a few, 10 to 20 in depth, and I relied a lot on two of the articles.
Do you recall the names of the lead authors in the studies that you said, that you just referenced?
Yes, one of them was Demuniak.
Could you spell that, please?
I wish. D-E-M-U-N-N-Y-C-K, I believe.
And was there...
And then there was another one, Pollack, P-O-L-L-A-C-K.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
Thank you. Your Honor, my recollection is correct. We've already pre-marked as exhibits for identification these studies, two studies. I may be incorrect in that. If so, I have studies. I'm going to show them to Mr.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. So we can just make sure I have all pages.
Do you have these handed up for the order?
Oh, I have them.
Okay. If I can just have them, we'll make them around here.
Okay, I've got them. These are them. If I could have marked for identification as one document, please.
Exhibit PPP for ID.
One more, Madam Court Reporter. Thank you.
And exhibit QQQ for ID. I see the court reporters down.
Sure. Yes, Your Honor.
Which is what?
Exhibit PPP is the Demunic.
Okay.
and exhibit QQQ is Pollock, and those are the lead author names. You're welcome. May I leave them with the witness, Your Honor?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Russell, I have provided you with those two exhibits. I would ask you to just briefly take a look at them and let me know whether you recognize those as the articles that you were referencing before.
Yes.
Now let's start out with the Demunic study. Is that exhibit PPP?
PP.
Right. So is this the study that you referenced earlier in your testimony?
Yes.
Can you briefly describe for the jury how that study related to the opinions in this case?
Objection.
Sustained.
Are these the studies that you cite to as a basis for support for your opinions in this case?
Yes.
And is QQQ a study that also supports your opinion in this case?
Yes.
Now, in terms of your conclusions with regard to, if we can go back once more to exhibit number one. With regard to your opinion on the cause of these injuries, can you once again state your opinion as to the cause of these injuries?
I believe these injuries were caused by a dog attack.
So I'm going to strike that word.
Yeah. So. Oh. Dr. Russell, if you could, with regard to bite parlance, can you state what your opinion is with regard to bite? So do you have an opinion as to what caused these injuries?
Yes. I believe that these injuries are the result of dog bites and or claw marks.
And do you hold that opinion to a reasonable degree of medical certainty?
Yes.
That is all the questions I have for this witness at this time.
All right, thank you. You want this? Okay.
May I?
Yes.
Good afternoon, Dr. Russell.
Good afternoon, Mr. Brennan.
Dr. Russell, we've met before?
Yes.
I've asked you questions before?
Yes.
And you've testified before where I've had a chance to ask you about some of your statements and opinions, haven't I?
Yes.
Before this case, had you ever testified as an expert in dog bites in any federal court in the United States?
No.
Before this case, had you ever testified in any state court in anywhere in the country as an expert in dog bites?
No.
Other than this case, have you ever testified in a courtroom as an expert about dog bites?
No.
Last year, you learned that there was litigation regarding this case, Commonwealth versus Karen Reed, correct?
Yes.
You learned a little bit of information about it, and it piqued your interest, didn't it?
Yes.
Did you know that the case was receiving a lot of attention?
No.
Did you know that it was on television?
I had no idea until I got here.
You spoke to a colleague in Los Angeles, correct?
I'm sorry, I spoke to who?
A colleague.
I spoke to a district attorney in Los Angeles.
And did you just bring up the subject, or did that person bring it up to you?
I brought it up.
When you brought that up, is it because you knew of the relationship between that district attorney and somebody on the defense team?
Yes.
You wanted to get involved in this high-profile case, didn't you?
No.
Well, you weren't called by anybody on the defense and retained as an expert in the traditional sense, were you?
That's correct.
It was after you reached out yourself and interjected yourself into this case, true?
I did so for a reason, and the reason being that I knew I was the one of the only people in the United States board certified and residency trained in emergency medicine and also residency trained in forensic pathology, and therefore I had a unique skill or knowledge set, and I was one of the very few people that had the knowledge of dog bites, that, as well as those other trainings.
And because of the fact that you held this opinion about yourself, you wanted to get involved in this very high-profile case, didn't you?
I thought I could help clarify the issues as to whether or not this could be a dog bite, and maybe they could move on to something else if it wasn't.
Did you want to get involved?
No, not really.
Inevitably, you got hired by the defense, didn't you?
Yes, I reluctantly agreed.
And they paid for your time?
They are paying for the time.
Yes. Did you know that there was a relationship between the district attorney you spoke to in California and somebody on this defense table?
I know, yes.
So when you spoke to the district attorney, did you have the hope that they would reach out on your behalf to get you involved in this case?
As I said, I hoped that they could reach out to the team and I could help clarify issues so that they could move on. If it wasn't if these weren't dog bites, then no sense spending a whole bunch of time on it.
After you testified in this case last year, you then began to advertise yourself as a dog bite expert, didn't you?
I had advertised myself many years ago as a dog bite expert, I think. I'm not sure, but yes, I did advertise myself as a emergency medicine and forensic pathology expert.
Did you take
with other, you know, sub interests?
Sure. Did you take a photograph of you testifying at trial and put it on a website to promote your accomplishments?
It's a listing service for physicians, and yes, there is a photograph.
So you took a photograph from your participation in this event?
Yes, that's there.
And you used that photograph in your participation at this event to try to procure future work, didn't you?
I wouldn't say that that was the reason, no.
When you listed a number of things that you have experience in after this case, you then added that you were an expert in dog bites, didn't you?
I believe I am an expert in dog bites, yes.
But after this case, and after you took the photograph from this case, and after you created this advertising, you then added the fact that you were an expert in dog bites, didn't you?
It was all at the same time. And it was submitted at the same time.
Right. After this case, after you participated or volunteered to involve yourself in this case, you then used it as a marketing opportunity, didn't you?
Well, I had retired from my full-time job, and I had time, and I wanted to get more involved in some forensic legal cases, and not specifically dog bite cases. I have much more experience with other cases.
Undoubtedly, I respect that, but simply, after you testified in this case, you did use your participation as a way to try to garner future interest in cases and income, didn't you?
I did, but I did not mention this case.
Have you testified in any other court since this case as a dog bite expert?
No.
You had written a few articles that were peer-reviewed on dog bites back in, is it the 1990s?
Yes.
And they involve law enforcement canines?
Yes.
And you describe in those articles how a law enforcement canine grabs and holds, is that the technique they call it?
Yes.
Where they lock their jaw and then they pull and hold on to the subject that they're attacking or holding?
Yes, that's what they were trained to do back then.
And you would agree that there's a difference between, generally, the way a domestic dog bites and a law enforcement dog bites?
Generally, yes.
Since those two articles in 1990, have you authored anything else regarding dog bites?
No.
You had mentioned that you had gone to seminars regarding identification. Now, I had a chance to ask you a number of months ago about some details about training and education you have on pattern recognition analysis as it specifically relates to dog bites. Remember I asked you those questions a number of months ago?
I believe you did.
And I'd asked you if you could give us any specific listed trainings that you had regarding pattern recognition analysis of dog bites. And at that time, you did not have any names of any classes or seminars or certificates that you have. You mentioned again today that you have attended seminars regarding dog identification analysis. Do you now know some of those trainings and seminars? And are any of those listed on your CV?
The trainings that I went to on bite marks in general, they were bite marks in general and included things like how to determine what was a human dog, a human bite, how to differentiate a human bite from a dog bite. But no, I did not specifically attend seminars limited to dog bites only. However, actually, there was one this past February that I did attend at the American Academy of Forensic Science.
Over your many, many decades, you did not attend any seminars on pattern recognition analysis of dog bites, did you?
Of specifically dog bites? No.
I only want to talk about dog bites. I know you're well trained and educated. I respect that. But I want to talk about dog bites. You didn't attain any certificates in pattern recognition analysis of dog bites, did you?
I don't think there are any that exist, any training programs like that.
In fact, forensically, have you ever been presented with a wound and been asked to determine whether or not the source of it was a dog bite? Other than right here in this very case, have you ever been asked to do that in your entire history?
In my clinical career, perhaps once or twice, but not that I can give you a specific name.
Well, the couple times, tell us what stands out. When were you asked ever over your entire career to do a forensic evaluation of a wound and identify whether it was a dog bite? When did that happen?
A forensic evaluation? No, never.
Never?
Never. Okay. It just doesn't come up.
Okay. And so this is the first shot, the first crack you've had at looking at a photograph and trying to make a determination based just on a photograph whether or not the wound is generated from a particular mechanism, and in this case, your opinion, a dog bite.
No, actually, I disagree. I've been taking photographs of dog bites since the 1990s.
And when you took the photographs, you knew they were dog bites?
I did know that they were dog bites, yes. I have a collection.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry.
That was it.
Okay. So, not when you knew it was a dog bite and you took a photo. I know you have an interest. I'm asking, other than this case, there was never, ever a time in your career where you were presented with a photo and asked to give an opinion whether the mechanism of injury was a dog bite, other than this case.
That's correct.
So this is not a pattern recognition analysis engagement that you have any experience in before this effort.
I've recognized that pattern many times.
I appreciate your opinion, but I want to ask my question. You do not have experience over your long, accomplished career in the effort of pattern recognition analysis of dog bite wounds. Isn't that fair to say?
Okay.
You mentioned before, and you just mentioned again, so I want to ask you some more questions. You believe that you are uniquely qualified to look at a photograph and give an opinion about the source of the injury.
I'm not uniquely qualified. That's done all the time in forensic pathology. Many forensic pathologists do that.
Did you just say you're one of the very few physicians in the United States who has both the forensic and the clinical experience to look at a photograph and make a determination, the mechanism of injury?
No, I said if I said that, then that was incorrect. I meant dog bites. But your question just now was not specific to dog bites. Postmortem photographs are used all the time in forensic pathology for second opinions.
You're right. My apologies. Did you say today and before, have you said that you believe you're one of only few physicians in the United States who could authoritatively distinguish between causes of wounds when it relates to dog bites?
I did say that, and that's because of my unique training. I don't know of another doctor in the whole United States that did two residencies, one in emergency medicine and one in forensic pathology, and has a lifelong interest in dog bites.
So Dr. Russell, from your perspective, as far as you know, you were the only person in the entire United States of America who is qualified to look at a photograph and make a determination whether the wound was derived from a dog bite.
No, I am one of I'm the only physician that I know of that can do that. There may be, a few others out there. There may be, but I don't know of any other physicians that can do that.
Do you recognize anybody other than yourself who has this very particular expertise to be able to do this kind of work?
I'm not aware of anyone.
You were a medical examiner, a forensic pathologist?
Yes.
And you know there's about, or would you agree there's probably about 900 to 1,000 medical examiners around the country at the same time over a period of time?
I believe that there might be, there's probably, I think there's around 500 or 600 practicing forensic pathologists.
And do you think because they are forensic pathologists, those 500 or 600 people have the unique qualifications as you do to be able to give an opinion about the genesis of a wound?
Wounds in general, perhaps. Dog bite wounds, I doubt that very many of them have a specific interest in dog bite wounds.
And so you think that of all those forensic pathologists, medical examiners, you think that qualification and experience itself is not enough to qualify somebody to give an opinion on a photograph about the genesis of a wound related to dog bites?
Well, if a forensic pathologist has autopsied one or two cases of dog bite wounds versus my experience with over 500 to 1,000 cases of dog bite wounds, I'm not so sure that person would be a very good expert in that kind of a case.
Have you ever heard of a doctor named Dr. La Posada?
I've heard of Dr. La Posada.
Have you ever read any reports by Dr. La Posada?
No.
Has anybody ever shared with you any information or opinions of Dr. La Posada?
I believe she has a very good reputation.
Have you ever? Well, how do you believe that? Who told you?
Because
that?
I've heard of her name at national organizations. I believe she's given presentations nationally. I've seen her name, over a dozen years or so.
Do you know whether or not she has any participation in this case?
I believe she does.
Well, so you know when you're providing accolades that she has maybe some involvement in this case? You know that?
I would provide those same accolades if she didn't have involvement in this case.
Do you know that she has involvement in this case?
I believe she does. I the attorneys have not shared everything with me. Well, in terms of who the witnesses are.
Somebody must have shared her name. Who shared her name with you?
I'm very familiar with her name outside this case.
Who shared her name that she may be a participant in this case?
I don't remember. I don't remember.
Well, somebody met.
I think I got a file or something, but okay. Yeah.
So when you were reviewing this case, did you get materials from any of the attorneys authored by Dr. La Posada?
I don't think I read a report. I was very interested in reading a report by Dr. La Posada. I was very interested, but I didn't see one.
So when you received materials in this case, you didn't read all the materials the defense gave you?
I don't believe they gave me the report.
What report?
Any report that Dr. La Posada might have written.
Do you know whether or not you've received the report or not?
I received something that had her name on it. I don't remember what it was, but I was looking for a medical examiner's or a report, an actual report, and I did not see one.
Dr. Russell, you are meticulous when you look and examine things.
Right.
So you would know what you've received and what you've read and what you haven't. So the fact that you're telling us that you saw something with her name on it, can you give us a little more information and share with us what it is you actually received about this Dr. La Posada? What did you get from the defense?
I saw something. I think it was the name of a file folder. But I looked for a report, and there was no report in it.
Did you ever ask for one?
I didn't ask. I really wanted to read it, but I didn't. It wasn't given to me, so I didn't ask.
Were you ever told what other people's opinions might be regarding those photographs?
I'm aware that there was a Dr. Sheridan involved in a previous proceeding, and he believed that those were consistent with dog bites.
Did you ever receive any reports from the defense about what other persons' opinions would be in this trial about dog bites?
Oh, yes, I received a report authored by a non-physician, yes.
So when you say non-physician, you're trying to make the point because you think that person might be your opponent in this case?
I don't have any opponents.
Okay, so why did you qualify him as a non-physician?
Because I believe that in order to really understand wounds on a human being, one needs to have treated wounds, seen lots of wounds, and I think that the person that is best qualified for that is a physician.
So a medical examiner wouldn't cut it, in your opinion?
A medical examiner is a physician.
So you think a medical examiner has enough experience to come in and give an opinion on dog bites?
Some, but in their case, I would hope that they have had actual clinical experience with autopsying some cases where there were dog bite wounds, because I don't think they worked in the emergency room or any other clinical setting where they treated people. So I'd want to see if they had experience with dog bites.
I'm a doctor as a disqualification. How about a dog trainer? Would a dog trainer who's not a doctor have the experience in your mind to come in and give an opinion about photographs and the genesis of the wounds?
Objection, Your Honor.
I'm going to allow it.
How about a non-doctor, as you said, you've made a distinction.
Uh-huh.
They're simply a dog trainer, maybe even an uncertified dog trainer. Would that person have the qualifications in your mind to be able to look at photographs and determine whether or not the cause of the injury is a dog bite?
There may be a certain small subset of people who have, very much experience with dog bites that could qualify as suggesting that these are consistent with dog bites, but I don't think that they could definitively. I think that someone could who dealt with many, many, many dog bites in the past on humans could possibly say that they were consistent with.
Even if they didn't have the clinical experience?
Well, I'd prefer that to hear that information from a physician, but I wouldn't rule out that only doctors, only a physician, MD, could say that something was a dog bite.
It seems like the standard is now kind of changing a little bit. Because when I asked you mentioned the other person, you disqualified the person because they weren't a doctor. It seems now in some instances
you're willing to accept a non-doctorate to your very select group of applicants?
If someone, well, I can explain. If someone had looked at perhaps hundreds and hundreds of wounds inflicted by a dog that they know was inflicted by a dog, and they saw the resulting photographs on a person, I think that particular person may be able to make some comment as to whether or not some wounds are consistent. However, in terms of a medical examiner, if they've autopsied one case or two cases of dog bites and they're trying to testify based on some pictures, I would be a little concerned about that.
Does qualification for this type of business, in your mind, depend on who hires you?
Absolutely not.
Suffice to say, you've never taken a class in the forensic analysis of dog bites.
I don't think any class exists.
But I'm asking about your experience.
That's correct.
You haven't, have you?
That's correct. I can't take a course that doesn't exist.
You've never engaged in any type of opinion looking at photographs and then had that opinion peer-reviewed by other dog bite experts, have you?
No.
Do you have any experience in veterinarian medicine?
I'm aware of it. That's my experience.
Do you have any accomplishments, like degrees?
No.
Now, you've testified a number of times in this case, haven't you?
Yes.
And when you testify, you know there's a court reporter and there are transcripts, correct?
Yes.
You originally testified when you first came out and volunteered to testify last year, and there was a hearing before trial, wasn't there?
Excuse me? Say again, please.
When you volunteered to come out last year, there was a hearing before you testified at trial, wasn't there?
Yes.
Do you remember that was on June 18th, 2022?
Sounds right.
And then you then testified at trial on June 21st, 2022?
Yes.
I didn't have the privilege of meeting you on either of those events, did I?
No.
But since then we have met.
Yes.
And we had a chance to speak at a subsequent hearing on December 12th, 2024.
Yes.
And then after that, we again had an opportunity to discuss this on January 7, 2025.
Yes.
When you reviewed the case, when you first reviewed it before you testified last year, you had very limited information, didn't you?
Yes.
You had just an autopsy report, photographs from the coroner, photographs from the hospital, an emergency room report. Yes?
Yes, I had more than that.
The medical examiner file had a toxicology report?
Yes, and there was more.
Okay.
I believe there was a dog bite, a town of Canton report.
Okay, so when you had an opportunity to look at the medical examiner's report, you yourself had been a medical examiner, correct?
Yes.
And there's a unique advantage of actually conducting an autopsy as opposed to just looking at photographs, isn't there?
Yes, there is.
And if you are actually conducting the autopsy, you firsthand can make observations about injuries, make measurements, and see things that don't always appear in photographs.
That's correct.
And when you would do medical exams, you had a distinct advantage over people who would later see your work, a written report, or photographs, because you were there actually conducting the investigation.
Yes.
And it's for that reason that when you testified before, you have acknowledged that you relied on Dr. Scorti Bello's report for information.
Yes.
Because you didn't have the benefit of doing measurements or looking at depths or anything else firsthand.
Yes. Correct? Correct.
And when you looked at that photograph that you discussed with the jury, you also had a chance to see Dr. Scorti Bello's report regarding the abrasions on Mr. O'Keefe's arm.
Yes.
She described those abrasions as superficial, didn't she?
Yes.
She actually gave measurements, 3 centimeters superficial abrasion on the right medial upper arm. Right?
Yes.
You not only read that, you deferred to her ability to have a first-hand observation, and you accepted that as true, didn't you?
Yes, but there's no interpretation of that abrasion.
Multiple abrasions from 2 to 3 millimeters and up to 7 centimeters on the posterior right arm and forearm.
Yes.
Did you read that from Dr. Scordabello?
Yes.
Did you accept her finding and observation?
Yes.
And you would agree she was in a far superior position than you when she made these observations and notes, correct?
They are not inconsistent with what I said.
That's not what I asked, though.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't mean to be sharp.
Okay.
I apologize. Did you rely on her ability and firsthand observation of those wounds?
Yes.
And did you appreciate or accept the fact she had a superior opportunity to evaluate those wounds firsthand that you did not have the benefit of?
She made no interpretation of those wounds.
Well, did you know that Dr. Scordabello had described them as superficial?
They are.
Did you know that she said there was no depth and no puncture?
Not inconsistent with what I said.
I understand, Doctor, but I'm asking you, do you know that her position is that there was no puncture and no depth to those wounds?
Objection, Your Honor. Can we have the witness see the report that he keeps referring to?
Can you answer that question without seeing it, or do you need to see it?
Well, I remember it, but I there's no inconsistency here. I agree with that.
Would you accept that Dr. Scordabello's opinion is that there was no depth and no puncture to those wounds?
May I see the report?
It might not be in the report. I'm asking about any testimony, anything that she's ever said. Would you agree or accept her position that there is no puncture or depth to those wounds?
Objection, Your Honor. Like all the questions that were about an autopsy. Yes.
Okay.
May I?
Yes, please.
Dr. Russell, I read to you the measurements that were in Dr. Scordabello's report. Are you aware that she testified that these superficial abrasions did not have any depth or any puncture?
I don't recall that.
Well, would you agree if Dr. Scordabello testified in this court that those superficial abrasions did not have any puncture or depth, would you agree with that assessment?
Objection, Your Honor.
In that form, it's sustained.
Would you agree that the superficial abrasions on Mr. O'Keefe's arm had no punctures?
I agree.
Would you agree that the superficial abrasions on Mr. O'Keefe's arm had no depth?
No measurable depth, yes.
Between the last time you testified and then you testified here today, have you spoken to the attorneys at all regarding the issue of punctures?
No.
Because you are agreeing today that those superficial abrasions did not have any punctures, right?
They don't appear to have any punctures.
But you, in the past, have testified very, very differently than that, haven't you?
No.
Now, we've spoken many times. I'm going to go through many of those examples later, but we'll do that a little bit later, Dr. Russell. Over the course of your many testimonies under oath, would it be fair to say that you have changed your opinions about the superficial abrasions to John O'Keefe's arm many times?
I don't believe that's fair to say.
In the past, when you were describing Mr. O'Keefe's superficial abrasions on his arm, did you give varying and different opinions about the cause of each individual wound, area of wound?
I don't believe so.
When you first gave opinions, that was before the last proceeding, you came in and you were questioned before you testified in that initial proceeding, right? I'm trying to be as specific as I can. You testified last year?
Yes. In
please.
There was a hearing and then there was a proceeding.
Okay. That prior hearing, can we call the first event the prior hearing and the next one the prior proceeding?
I'm confused.
I don't want to confuse you. I'm just trying to follow the rules. You testified twice last year, didn't you?
Three times.
Okay. The first time you testified was just before the judge?
Yes.
Okay. When you first testified before the judge, do you remember that you had uncertainty about how each and every one of those wounds was caused?
I don't remember that.
And do you remember when you then testified a couple days later at the proceeding that some of your opinions changed from the first time you testified?
I don't believe that.
And then when you later met me and we've had a chance to talk over the last two events, December and January, would it be fair to say that your opinions regarding the individual areas of wound changed?
I don't believe so.
Okay. At some point before or during our conversations in December and January, you wrote a report, didn't you?
Yes.
When you wrote that report, you hadn't written a report before the first time you came in and testified, had you?
That's correct.
And it was between those hearings in December and in January where you wrote your first report.
Sounds correct.
You dated that report December 9th, 2024. Does that ring a bell?
Yes.
When you wrote that report, you did not write that report alone, did you?
I did.
You had some help, didn't you?
Not in the content of the report.
Well, you sent the report back a number of times for review and revisions, didn't you?
In terms of organization.
And some of the language in this report is really not your language. It's the language of somebody who helped you write some of this, isn't it?
You know, if somebody helped me write it, it would have been much better written than that.
Didn't you agree that you had some assistance with the report? Haven't you testified to that before?
And no, in terms of organization, there was some comments though, this sentence belongs, you know, with this paragraph or the, you know, whatever. But in terms of content, that was my work.
Well, it was your report, correct?
It's my report.
And when you write a report, it's your words, not somebody else's, isn't that true?
That's correct.
But nevertheless, you had somebody assisting you, true?
In terms of organization, yes.
Who was helping you with the report?
It was somebody from the law office.
Well, it was this gentleman right here, Attorney Alisi, who just asked you questions. He helped
you,
didn't he?
No, actually it wasn't.
Was it from his law firm that somebody helped you?
I believe so, but it was in terms of organization.
Do you remember who was helping you with your report?
I don't remember her name.
Would you agree that after that report was written, many of your opinions changed?
No.
In your report, you provide your background. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. And you've been licensed to practice medicine since 1988?
Yes.
As a physician?
Yes.
And you've been licensed to practice medicine as a surgeon?
It's called physician and surgeon license.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a physician and surgeon's license?
I do.
Okay. Have you ever practiced as a surgeon?
Well, in the emergency department, we do surgery. We have to do some surgery sometimes. We have to open up people's chests and, you know, and compress the heart sometimes when they have gunshot wounds to the chest. I've had to put chest tubes in. I've had to debride dog bite wounds and other wounds. So, yes, there is a component of surgery.
If you do stitches, that's considered surgery, isn't it?
Maybe.
Well, medically speaking, stitches is surgery.
I don't know. Maybe.
Okay. Do you have a surgeon's license?
I have a physician and surgeon's license in California.
Now, when you first looked at this case and testified, do you remember when you were looking at Mr. O'Keefe's superficial wounds You said that you thought they appeared to be consistent with an animal attack?
I do remember that.
And when you were describing animal attack, you were a lot less specific than you were today, weren't you?
Yes.
You were less sure about your opinion when you first testified about this case than you provided to this jury today.
I was certain that it was a dog attack. However, as I mentioned before to you, in medicine, we're taught never, you know, nothing is 100%. And therefore, never say, you know, anything's 100%. So that's why I gave that that generalization. However, I have reviewed the case. I personally was certain that was a dog, that those were dog marks. Now, I have reviewed this case over and over and over again. Plus, I've read additional articles more than once, and which substantiate again my findings. So my degree of certainty perhaps increased.
So when you first testified in this case, back in June of 2022, are you agreeing that your testimony was less certain than today?
I believed that it was a dog attack at that time.
When you testified, you didn't say dog attack, you said animal attack at the beginning, didn't you?
Yes.
And when you were asked about the cause, you said that it could be bite or scratch wounds.
Correct.
So back in June, when you were looking at individual wounds, you, at that time anyways, were unable to differentiate between bite and scratch wounds.
They are very similar.
I understand, but today you seem pretty unequivocal. So I want to go back to the beginning and see the evolution. I'm asking a question.
All right. So the argumentative part is out. Ask the question, Mr. Blair.
I want to go back to identify the evolution of your opinions. So let's start at the beginning.
Yes, Your Honor.
So, question, please.
At the beginning, before your opinion evolved, you started with an opinion that this could have been either bite or scratch wounds, right?
Yes.
And if there was actually a methodology where you could identify superficial abrasions and make a determination whether it was from an animal or a dog, there would be something definitive, specific, where you could identify a scratch from a bite wound, wouldn't there be?
Not unless there was a piece of tooth in the wound or a piece of nail. There would otherwise not be any specificity.
You talked about patterns when you first testified back in June of last year.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talked about the patterns, again, you had some uncertainty whether those patterns were caused by nails, the claws, or could have been caused by teeth. Isn't that fair to say originally that was your position?
There is some overlap in terms of the appearances. They can appear very similar, and they can be arranged very similar in terms of parallel lines.
In fact, when you first testified, you weren't consistently even saying that it was a dog, or as you say today, dog attack. You were saying, in your opinion, they were the result of animal bites or scratches. That was what you originally opined, isn't it?
We just went through that, yes.
And at some point, you said that it might most likely be a large dog. Do you remember that?
Objection, Your Honor. Can we approach with regard to this line of questioning?
So why don't we break for today?
Okay.
All right. So, jurors, we're not going to finish this today in the next 5 minutes, so it seems like it's a good place to break. I do have to give you those same cautions. Please do not discuss this case with anyone. Don't do any independent research or investigation into the case. If you happen to see, hear, or read anything about the case, please disregard it and let us know. Please be very careful with your social media use. Tomorrow is also a full day. We'll see you tomorrow. Thank you very much. Dr. Russell, you can again just follow me.
Thank you.
Close it open. Follow me.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I see counsel while the jury's filing out, please?
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Time for a sofa upgrade? Visit washablesofas.com and discover Anabay, where designer style meets budget-friendly prices, with sofas starting at $699. Anabay brings you the ultimate in furniture innovation with a modular design that allows you to rearrange your space effortlessly. Perfect for both small and large spaces, Anabay is the only machine-washable sofa inside and out. Say goodbye to stains and messes with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics that make cleaning easy. Liquid simply slides right off. Designed for custom comfort, our high-resilience foam lets you choose between a sink and feel or a supportive memory foam blend. Plus, our pet-friendly, stain-resistant fabrics ensure your sofa stays beautiful for years. Don't compromise quality for price. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your living space today with no-risk returns and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get up to 60% off plus free shipping and free returns. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.
Let's be real. Life happens. Kids spill. Pets shed. And accidents are inevitable. Find a sofa that can keep up at washablesofas.com. Starting at just $699, our sofas are fully machine washable inside and out. So you can say goodbye to stains and hello to worry-free living. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics. They're kid-proof, pet-friendly, and built for everyday life. Plus, changeable fabric covers let you refresh your sofa whenever you want. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa anytime to fit your space, whether it's a growing family room or a cozy apartment. Plus, they're earth-friendly and trusted by over 200,000 happy customers. It's time to upgrade to a stress-free, mess-proof sofa. Visit washablesofas.com today and save. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Celebrate over 100 years of steak perfection during the Omaha Steaks Anniversary Sale. Save 50% site-wide on USDA certified tender steaks and more. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code CERTIFIED at omahasteaks.com today. Don't wait. Shop the anniversary sale at omahasteaks.com to save 50% on legendary steaks and more. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code CERTIFIED. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.
Let's be real. Life happens. Kids spill. Pets shed. And accidents are inevitable. Find a sofa that can keep up at washablesofas.com. Starting at just $699, our sofas are fully machine washable inside and out. So you can say goodbye to stains and hello to worry-free living. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics. They're kid-proof, pet-friendly, and built for everyday life. Plus, changeable fabric covers let you refresh your sofa whenever you want. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa anytime to fit your space, whether it's a growing family room or a cozy apartment. Plus, they're earth-friendly and trusted by over 200,000 happy customers. It's time to upgrade to a stress-free, mess-proof sofa. Visit washablesofas.com today and save. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply. Let's be real. Life happens. Kids spill. Pets shed. And accidents are inevitable. Find a sofa that can keep up at washablesofas.com. Starting at just $699, our sofas are fully machine washable inside and out. So you can say goodbye to stains and hello to worry-free living. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics. They're kid-proof, pet-friendly, and built for everyday life. Plus, changeable fabric covers let you refresh your sofa whenever you want. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa anytime to fit your space, whether it's a growing family room or a cozy apartment. Plus, they're earth-friendly and trusted by over 200,000 happy customers. It's time to upgrade to a stress-free, mess-proof sofa. Visit washablesofas.com today and save. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply. Life's messy. We're talking spills, stains, pets, and kids. But with Anabay, you never have to stress about messes again. At washablesofas.com, discover Anabay sofas, the only fully machine washable sofas inside and out, starting at just $699. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly, perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Upgrade your space today. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply. There's nothing like sinking into luxury. At washablesofas.com, you'll find the Anabay sofa, which combines ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. And get this, it's the only sofa that's fully machine washable from top to bottom, starting at only $699. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash, perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabay has you covered. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your home. Right now, you can shop up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply. There's nothing like sinking into luxury. At washablesofas.com, you'll find the Anabay sofa, which combines ultimate comfort and design at an affordable price. And get this, it's the only sofa that's fully machine washable from top to bottom, starting at only $699. The stain-resistant performance fabric slipcovers and cloud-like frame duvet can go straight into your wash. Perfect for anyone with kids, pets, or anyone who loves an easy-to-clean, spotless sofa. With a modular design and changeable slipcovers, you can customize your sofa to fit any space and style. Whether you need a single chair, love seat, or a luxuriously large sectional, Anabay has you covered. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your home. Right now, you can shop up to 60% off store-wide with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Add a little to your life. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.